On this Father's Day, I wish to you a happy Father's Day and appreciate you men who are actually practicing the role of a father, even of a grandfather, even a great-grandfather. And so may the Lord bless and use you. Having children does not necessarily make you a good father. It may make you a father, but not a good one. Having children, professing salvation, may make you a so-called Christian father. But this morning, I want us to look at authentic Christian fathers. When you think of the word authentic, what do you think of? I know there are cars that you can get that are kits, and you can put a car together like one of those old Ford Cobras that has that nice engine in it. What was it, the 428, Alex? And you can put together a kit, and you can make this beautiful car. But it's not authentic because it wasn't made that many years ago. You might be able to put together something that looks like something that is truly authentic, but it's not real. It's a copy. It is not the true. It is not the genuine thing. And here in John chapter 15, Jesus makes a statement. He says, I am the... He didn't say, I am the vine. He said, I am the true vine. I am the true vine. So this morning, I want us to look at authentic Christian fathers. There was an article I read this week entitled, Fatherless, America's Top Domestic Problem. It's by a man by the name of Larry Elder. He's a black man who wrote a very good article here. And he said, this is just a portion of it as he was introducing his article. There's a new documentary called The Streets Were My Father. And it features three Chicago men, two Hispanics and one black, who grew up without fathers. All three of these men did hard time for serious offenses, including murder. The film, with no narrator, just lets these three men talk. None blames systemic racism. All concede they made bad choices, but choices nonetheless. All three talked about the pain they felt growing up without a father figure to instruct, scold, guide, motivate, and instill confidence and direction. When children have no father who guides, instructs, scolds, motivates, instills with confidence and direction, we say those children are rudderless. And that's why the streets became the father to these three men. These three men representing many others in our nation today and indeed across the world. And so yes, this sermon this morning is to address fathers. It is to address men. But the sermon is for everybody. I'm talking about authentic Christianity. But I want to challenge men to be authentic Christian fathers, authentic Christians who are genuine. The Bible teaches that there are two classes of people in the world, believers and non-believers. You'll read that in Matthew chapter 7, enter ye in at the straight gate, for wide is the gate, and broad is the way that leads to destruction, many there be which go in thereat. The two ways. You're either a believer or a non-believer. The Bible doesn't break people down into professing believers, believers, and non-believers. You're either a believer or you're not. That's the two classes of people in the world. Many people, partly due to past evangelistic methods, equate being saved with professing to be saved. Well, I did what the tract told me to do, and I prayed this prayer, so I'm a Christian. I did what the preacher told me to do. I prayed this prayer, and so now I'm a Christian. And presto, now they're Christians. professing believers. The Bible makes very, very clear that there will be many professing believers in hell. Matthew chapter 7, verses 21 to 23. Acts chapter 8, verses 5 to 24. 2 Peter chapter 2. The whole book of Jude, professing believers in hell. The fact is, their practice contradicts their profession. Here's the key. There's no fruit. Leaves, but no fruit. We know that an unbeliever cannot produce fruit. I pose this question to you this morning. Is it possible for a believer to not produce fruit? What do you think about this statement? Quote, every Christian is a fruit-bearing Christian, question mark, end quote. Every Christian is a fruit-bearing Christian. Would you say that is true or false? Without saying anything out loud, I want you to answer yourself in your mind. Every Christian is a fruit-bearing Christian. It's true. There is no such thing as a fruitless Christian, somebody said. Every Christian bears some fruit. That's why if you meet somebody where there's no fruit in their life, you question whether that person's really saved. We say, there, you know, he says he's a Christian, but we always say, but there's no fruit. And so you yourself will question that person's salvation. Do you have a right, indeed an obligation, to say, I see no fruit, I doubt your salvation? I say you have an obligation, you have a right to say that to somebody. If there is no fruit, there is no salvation. Jesus is making clear in this passage to his disciples that every Christian will bear fruit. Fathers, you will bear fruit if you're an authentic Christian father. That the evidence of being a Christian is fruit. And so we have a metaphor in this passage, and here's my two main points this morning. And I've preached this message, I looked it up, 10 years ago in October. Why am I preaching a message I preached one time? Because you didn't get it the first time, that's why. And I reread this sermon and I go, wow, I need to be reminded of this myself. If I need to be reminded of it and I studied in depth to produce it in the first place, I'm thinking, how much more do the folks who listen to my sermons need to hear this as well again? Because I just read John 15 this last week in my devotions. I'm going through the Old Testament, 3 chapters a day, 1 chapter in the New Testament, and I hit John 15, and it hit me. And then as I was thinking about Father's Day and what I'm going to preach, I thought, you know what? I think fathers need to be reminded of this passage especially. Women too, children too, but fathers especially. And so I'm re-preaching this message. And so there's two main points. There is, in verses 1 through 6, the metaphor. And then secondly, there's the message. So it's not going to be the metaphor verses 1 through 6 and the message verses 7 through following. No, it's going to be the metaphor verses 1 through 6, the message 1 through 6. Because the message is going to be the message of the metaphor. What is a metaphor? A metaphor is a figure of speech where one thing represents another. For example, this is a good thing to think about right now. You say, that snow is like a white blanket. Now, what does snow have to do with a blanket? You're using a metaphor, a figure of speech, to say that snow is a nice white blanket. It's not really a blanket. You're not going to crawl under that snow and snuggle in, get real, and get warm. So you've used a metaphor to try to express something to somebody. People say, when I get up and somebody asks me to preach or to pray, I get cold feet. Now, wait a second. Do their feet really get cold? No, that's a metaphor for I get stage fright. I might show somebody a picture of my sons, and they will say, are those your sons? And I'll say, no, that's just a picture of my sons. And you know what I'm saying. But metaphorically speaking, yes, those are my sons. It represents my son. So a metaphor is a figure of speech where one thing represents something else. Already in the book of John, Jesus has used metaphors. Can you think of what those might be? He said in chapter 6, I am the bread of life. Now, do you picture him as a loaf of bread? No. What is he trying to express? He is using that metaphor to express something that if you don't eat of me, metaphorically, you will die in your sin. In chapter 8, he says, I am the light of the world. What is he, a light bulb? And I'm not trying to be sacrilegious here. No, but he is the light of the world. He uses an illustration that we can understand and say, you know what, with Jesus Christ, it takes the darkness in my life away. In chapter 10, he says, I am the door. He also says in chapter 10, I am the good shepherd. Now, here Jesus introduces another metaphor. And we've already talked about it. Verse 1 of chapter 15, I am the true vine. I am the true vine. So we see the metaphor of the vine. The vine is commonly used in the Old Testament to symbolize the nation of Israel. In fact, the vine was used for Israel on Maccabean coinage. You go back to the 165 BC or so, and the coins that the children of Israel, that the Israelites had then, had a vine on it. Why? Because in the Old Testament, they are often represented by a vine. But this vine always disappointed God, he who planted it. We read that in Isaiah chapter 5 this morning. Thus you see his judgment in each passage. Unlike Israel, Jesus says, I am the true vine. Unlike Israel, who was a disappointment to God, was Jesus, his son, a disappointment to him? Not at all. He is the true vine. The important relationship that we have, and even the Jews have, is not your relationship to Israel. The relationship is that you have with Jesus Christ. Jesus Christ is the true vine. You know, it's important. It's an important thing to the Jew to be connected to Abraham. It's an important thing to the Jew to be connected to Moses. It's meaningless. Unless you have a relationship with Jesus Christ, you're connected to the wrong thing. Jesus Christ has assumed the responsibility Israel failed to fulfill. So there's the metaphor of the vine. Well, we see another metaphor in verse 1. And my father is the husbandman. My father is the farmer. He's the vine dresser. He's the cultivator. He is the husbandman. So Jesus Christ says, I am the vine. My father, God the Father, is the husbandman. He is the farmer. And in this passage, you do not read of God the Father or the husbandman doing anything to the vine. He does something to the branches that are connected to the vine. So what is the husbandman's focus in this passage? Let's read this passage. I am the true vine, my Father is the husbandman. Every branch in me that beareth not fruit, he taketh away. And every branch that beareth fruit, he purgeth it, that it may bring forth more fruit. Now ye are clean through the word which I have spoken unto you. Abide in me, and I in you. As the branch cannot bear fruit of itself, except it abide in the vine, no more can ye, except ye abide in me. I am the vine, ye are the branches. He that abideth in me, and I in him, the same bringeth forth much fruit. For without me ye can do nothing. If a man abide not in me, he is cast forth as a branch and is withered, and men gather them and cast them into the fire, and they are burned. So here we have the metaphor of the husbandman, and his focus is on fruit. When you planted your garden, many of you raised your hand and said, I planted a garden. What did you plant that garden for? Did you plant that garden to see leaves? Whether it be the leaves on the stalk of corn, or the leaves that come up with the radish under the root, as the root, or whether it be the leaves of the carrot, or the leaves. You know, you've got this beautiful vine in your garden. You say, I planted watermelon. Look at those beautiful vines. Did you plant it to see the vines? No, you're hoping for. You are expecting, you are anticipating a beautiful, juicy watermelon. That's fruit. That's why you planted it. What is God expecting from the branches on his vine? Fruit. So there's the metaphor of the husbandman. Then thirdly, we have the metaphor of the branches, verse 2. Every branch in me that beareth not fruit, he taketh away, and every branch that beareth fruit. So you've got two kinds of branches here. Branches that bear fruit, branches that don't bear fruit. The passage has to do with the branches and their connection to the vine. Now, who's the vine? Jesus Christ. Who is the husbandman? God the Father. Who are the branches? Now we can say, like I had the kids say, Wednesday night is the night the stars shine over Greeley, Colorado. And who are the stars? We are. So let me ask you this. Who are the branches?
We are.
You are. Every one of you is a branch. I am a branch. You are a branch. But there's something you need to understand about that branch that you are. You are either barren or bearing. You're one of two type of people in the world. Bearing, a Christian, or a professing Christian, barren. Let's look at the barren branch first, the fruitless branch. Because Jesus addresses this one first. Every branch in me that beareth not fruit. You go to your garden in August, and all you see are leaves. And you take your visitors, your family who visits, and you say, look at my beautiful garden. And they say, is what we ate tonight out of your garden? No. We haven't gotten anything out of our garden. All it does is it produces leaves. Isn't this a nice looking garden? And they're going to rub their head and go, you planted this just to look at these leaves? Listen, no farmer does that. Every farmer plants a garden to get fruit out of that garden. God put you on this earth for a reason. Just like you put that seed in that garden. So what kind of a connection does this barren branch have with Jesus Christ? Every branch in me, it's connected to him. At least superficially, it looks like this branch is connected to Jesus Christ. But he says, every branch in me that beareth not fruit. It is possible for someone to look like a Christian, to have leaves, but not bear fruit. This is what John Gill, a Baptist pastor in London who died in 1771, he calls this a historical faith. People who only profess to believe in him. They submit to outward ordinances. They become church members, and so they're considered to be in Christ, but they're not. As you read the Gospels, do you have any idea of what Jesus thinks about plants that do not do what they were planted to do? He was walking out of the temple one day. The next day he's coming back. He had cleansed the temple. This is right before his crucifixion. He comes back into the city. He's hungry and he's seeking some fruit. And he walks by a fig tree and he sought fruit thereon and there was none. What does he think about a tree that does not do what that tree is intended to do? What did he do? He cursed the tree. And it's explicitly says there in Matthew 21:19 that there were leaves on it. I submit to you that there are many professing Christians who are leafy with no fruit. Jesus cursed the fig tree. In Luke chapter 13, he tells this parable. In fact, let's just turn there because I think it'll do more to impact you if we see this. Luke chapter 13. Verse 6, he spake also this parable. A certain man had a fig tree planted in his vineyard, and he came and sought leaves thereon and found none. Are you there with me yet? Because you should have been saying it. Non-amen, pastor. Let's go back. Are you there yet? He spake also this parable. A certain man had a fig tree planted in his vineyard, and he came and sought leaves thereon. No, he sought fruit. Found none. What's the first thing he says? Then said he unto the dresser of his vineyard, behold, these 3 years I come seeking. There's God's patience, by the way. 3 years I come seeking fruit in this tree and find none. What's the verdict? Cut it down. Cut it down. Why cumbereth it the ground? Why is this tree taking up space, water, sunshine, soil, which at the disposal of another tree would produce fruit? Get this out of my vineyard. Get it out of here. Verse 8. And he answering said unto him, Lord, let it alone this year also till I shall dig about it and dung it. This is the vine dresser in this parable. And if it bear fruit, and notice that the well is in italics, it doesn't appear there. So it literally reads this way. And if it bear fruit, nothing. But if not, then afterward thou shalt cut it down. What does Jesus think about a tree that does not produce fruit if it's planted to produce fruit? You know what he thinks about it. Get rid of it. It's cumbering the ground. What does Jesus think about people who don't produce fruit? Well, you read in Matthew chapter 25, the parable of the talents. He gave 5, 2, and 1. 5 produced 5 more. The 2 produced 2 more. The one who had 2 produced 2 more. The one who had 1 hid it in the earth. What was the verdict? Go into the fire. Putting it very shortly. The parable of the 10 pounds in Luke chapter 19, he gave unto his servants, every one of them a pound. And they went out and they all multiplied that pound somehow, except for the last one. He took his pound and hid it in his napkin. And he came back and said, you know, I was afraid that you might, you know, that I might not do anything with it, so at least you have your pound. He said, you don't go to the fire. What's the verdict? It's judgment every time. So what does Jesus think of plants that don't produce fruit and people who don't produce fruit? He does not think well of them. There's the barren branch in John 15, 2. Every branch in me that beareth not fruit, what does he do? He taketh it away. He taketh it away. There's the barren branch, but now look at the bearing branch in the last part of that verse. And every branch that beareth fruit, what does he do to it? He doesn't take it away. He what? He purgeth it. He prunes it that it may bring forth more fruit. So whereas you have the superficial connection in the first part of the verse, the barren branch has a superficial connection. It's not taking life from the vine. It's not truly connected. But the bearing branch is a genuine connection. So you've got the metaphor of the vine, the metaphor of the husbandman, the metaphor of the branches. Now you have the metaphor of the fruit in verse 2. Fruit is expected. It's not just preferred. What is the purpose of a vineyard? To produce grapes, to produce fruit. If there's no fruit, the problem is not the vine in this parable, in this metaphor, Jesus is saying. The problem is not the vine. The problem is the branch. So the barren branch, what does Jesus do to it? He removes it. He does not remove the vine. The vine is Jesus Christ. And he says, every branch. Let me point something out to you. I was discussing this with Pastor Wexler this last week, and he said something that really struck me that I wanted to share with you. He said, you know something? Removing a non-producing branch doesn't hurt the vine. Hello? You take away a non-producing branch, it does not hurt the church. People are discouraged, oh man, people are leaving. Listen, if they're not producing fruit, it's a providential pruning. Don't get discouraged. I find that oftentimes people start leaving the church before they ever leave the church. They become unfaithful. Kind of like we're making our exit. And more, they're not here. More and more, and they're gone. I've seen that happen so many times. You know, it's different than when somebody is faithful to the very end and said, you know, the Lord has called us to. And you're like, oh, we're so sorry to see you leave, but our blessings upon you. But when people start backing out, it's like, what's wrong here? Then they say, the Lord is moving us. No, you're moving yourself. Folks, removing a non-producing branch does not hurt the vine. It does not hurt the tree. It does not hurt the church. When non-producing Christians leave a church, it does not hurt the church. It helps. When we were in Huntsville two Sundays ago, the pastor there preached a sermon in the Sunday evening service on 1 John 5:16. It was talking about the sin that is unto death. It's a very difficult passage to exposit. But the Bible talks about a sin that is unto death. There can be a Christian who is not producing. What does God do to a professing Christian who is not producing? Now, if there is fruit, because we're talking about the metaphor of the fruit, if there is fruit, the farmer doesn't leave that branch alone. What does he do? He goes to that branch and he begins to prune it, lovingly pruning it, cutting things off so that it might produce more fruit. What does the vine dresser want? What does the husbandman want in this? He wants fruit. And he wants more fruit. If there is fruit on the branch, the farmer prunes it, or literally makes it clean. Sometimes when you purge a tree, afterwards you step back and you look at that tree and you go, now it's cleaned up. What'd you do? You cut the dead out of it. Those guys who were here this last week, how many of you like these Russian hawthorn trees out in front of the church? Kathy, keep your hand down. How many of you like those Russian hawthorns, okay? I do. I like them. People were ready to get rid of them. I said, you know what? This year, I'm just going to do it myself. And I went there and I chopped those trees out. Man, I had stacks of branches out there. Stacks of branches. Now the leaves on those trees are going crazy. Because they're not designed to bring forth fruit. They're designed to bring forth branches, and they're going to bring forth fruit, Larry. It's going to drop it right there. We've got to clean those things up again. That's why people hate those trees. But there's this one over on this side that kind of catches the wind coming from the northwest. And for some reason, that tree had a lot of dead branches on it, even after I pruned it, because I pruned it before the leaves came out, and now I didn't know which ones were dead. So I had those guys come out, and I said, go to this tree, every dead branch on it, please clip it out. So they did. And they said, would you come look at this tree? It looks really bad now. And it does. But I knew it was going to look bad. But I said, you know what? It does look bad. But the dead is gone. And now in the place of those dead, some branches can grow and it can produce fruit. It looks clean. That's the word that is used here, clean. In verse 3, Jesus says of his disciples, now are ye what? Now you are clean, you're pruned. But one disciple, when he says this to them, is not with them. Had he been with them, Jesus could not have said, you are all clean. Who is that disciple? Judas Iscariot. He's no longer with them. He departed from them in chapter 13. He is not here through all these discourses in the last part of John. He's gone. Jesus is now sharing with the 11. Boy, this group keeps getting smaller. You say, man, this is discouraging. People are leaving Jesus. Yep, it happens all the time. You know what Jesus said about Judas? Go back to chapter 13. Look at verse 10. This is after Peter said, Lord, don't wash just my feet, but my hands and my head. Jesus saith to him, he that is washed needeth not save to wash his feet, but is clean every whit, and ye are clean, but not all. For he knew who should betray him. Therefore said he, ye are. At that time he said, you're not all clean. You get to chapter 15, Judas is gone. Now what does he say? You're all clean. Why? The bad branch has been pruned. The bad branch is gone. And he clearly states in verse 3, the agent of that cleansing, the word which I have spoken unto you. You see, Jesus prunes, God prunes for a reason. Not that this vine would produce fruit, but that it would produce more fruit. I find it interesting that the husbandman does not waste time on branches that are not productive. He doesn't waste time on them. Get this, folks. I want you to get this. He does not spend time on branches that don't produce, that are dead, except to cut them out. He simply removes them. He spends time with the branches that are already producing. You know, I think sometimes we spend too much time on people who don't produce. Pastor, why didn't you chase that person down? Because he's not producing anyway. And there are people who are producing that I want to spend my time with. Pastor told me this a long time ago before I ever went into the ministry. He said, don't waste your time on people that you have to chase around and constantly beg. Forget them. Let them go. By the way, that's what Jesus did. Did you ever see Jesus chasing people down? Please, please come back. He doesn't do it. He spends time with branches that are already producing. Let me ask you something. He is the great shepherd, the chief shepherd. Should the under shepherd do any differently? Here's the way Paul put it to Timothy. Timothy, the things that thou hast heard of me among many witnesses, the same commit thou to faithful men. Faithful men. Men you can depend upon. Men who are reliable. Men who will do what they say. Spend your time on men like that. The ones who won't do it, let them go. That sounds so... Wow, you're so unloving. No, what happens is if I spend time on people and if God spends his time on people who are not producing, then the people who are actually serving him and are producing for the pastor, he can't love them as he ought. So what is the fruit? That's the real question. So what is this fruit? You know what people say? This fruit, anytime you read about fruit in the Bible, it's souls. It's the salvation of people. In other words, is there fruit in your life? Have you ever won somebody to the Lord? If you have not, you're a non-producing Christian. That's what they would say. I submit to you that that's part of the answer. But the fruit is in Galatians chapter 5. Can you quote that passage with me, the fruit of the Spirit? But the fruit of the Spirit is love. Stop. Love. Well, everybody in the world loves. So what is it talking about there? It's those who love God. Thou shalt love the Lord thy God with all thy heart, with thy soul, with all thy might. The fruit of the Spirit is always loving God with all my heart, with all my soul, with all my mind. Fruit of the Spirit is love. Secondly, joy. Joy. The rejoice in the Lord always. This rejoicing in the Lord. It's not this fake joy that people have in this world. The fruit of the Spirit is a true joy that is inner. It's not happiness. It's joy. But the fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, peace. It's a true peace. It's a true relationship with God without any obstacles and obstructions because I'm living for Him. The fruit of the Spirit is peace. I rest in Him. The fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, peace, long-suffering, gentleness, goodness, faith, faithful, reliable, dependable faith. Fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, peace, long-suffering, gentleness, goodness, faith, meekness. Not weakness, meekness. Temperance, self-control. Now, those are the character qualities of Jesus Christ. So what is true fruit? It's Christ-likeness. And if somebody is truly Christ-like, they will naturally be a soul winner. So you don't focus on sinning, on soul winning. You focus on following Christ. You follow Him, you'll become more like Him. You'll become a soul winner. But people can be a soul winner without being a fruitful Christian. That's the metaphor. The message is what we see secondly. And this is really what Jesus wants us to know. I'm not going to get through this morning. I plan to, but I'm not going to because our time is almost out. Here's what Jesus wants to know. He applies this metaphor beginning in verse 4. What's the very first word in verse 4 out loud, please?
Abide.
Abide. 11 times in verses 1 through 16, he uses that word abide. Would you mind if we just went through this and pointed out these words abide? Verse 4. It appears three times. Abide in me. Later on, except it abide in the vine. Except ye abide in me. Now verse 5, it's used once. He that abideth in me. Verse 6, if a man abide not in me. Verse 7, twice. If ye abide in me and my words abide in you. Verse 9, you say, I don't see abide in there. It is. It's the word continue. Continue ye in my love. Verse 10, it's twice. Ye shall abide in my love. Last part of verse 10, and abide in his love. Verse 16, you say, I don't see abide in there. It is, but it's translated remain, that your fruit should remain. Another way to translate the word abide is continue. I find this very helpful when I translate it continue. Let's go back to verse 4. Jesus says, continue in me. Except it continue in the vine. Except ye continue in me. Verse 5 again, he that continueth in me. Verse 6, if a man continue not in me. Verse 7, if ye continue in me, and my words continue in you. Verse 9, continue ye in my love. Verse 10, ye shall continue in my love. Verse 10 again, and continue in his love. Verse 16, that your fruit should continue. What is God interested in? Continuing fruit, a Christian who continues in him. The test of reality is continuance. Have you ever heard me say that? It's not original with me. I got that from a commentator by the name of, last name is Bruce, so not the first name Bruce. He said continuance is the test of reality. Folks, that's what reality of a Christian is. It's not that you prayed a prayer some 20 years ago. No. What are you doing today? What is going on in your life right now? Today is the true test. Are you continuing? Because there are people who have professed salvation and they're a dead branch. The life that they profess to be getting from the vine, there's no connection. They're hanging on, but there's nothing. Just leaves. It's an unauthentic Christian. fake. Dads, why are families being destroyed in America? And we can talk all day about the families in America and what's happening to them. The streets become the fathers and so forth. Well, what's happening in the churches? You know why the churches are falling? Because we don't have dads who are authentic Christian fathers. Truly abiding in Jesus Christ, truly continuing in Him. That's my challenge this morning. Jesus said, I am the true vine. My Father is the husbandman. Every branch in me that beareth not fruit, He takes it away. Every branch that bears fruit, He prunes it that it might bring forth more fruit. Now ye are clean through the word which I have spoken unto you. Disciples, continue in me.